The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
This show has been brought to you by Heaps More Energy New Zealand for solar monitoring services. The show is predicated on the responsibilities and rights inherent in us all to take part in the conversation and not just talk the talk, but walk the walk. Solar Made Simple is every Monday morning at 9:30 a.m. with a replay on Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. And so much happening in the world out there. We better cop a few negotiated settlements out of the COP30 climate summit. And it's to close after 2 weeks in the Amazonian city of Belém. It would have been done by now, but let's see what has come out of that, and even a fire caused unexpected moments of drama. So that drama, is that from hot air or from fire or portents of doom to come? The jury's out on that one. So beneath enormous tents erected over a former airport at the edge of a rainforest, nations also adopted some decisions on how to battle climate change. Here are the main negotiated outcomes and the voluntary commitments made during the summit, attended by nearly 200 nations. 200 nations, that's immense. On fossil fuels, we do know that one of New Zealand representatives was awarded the Fossil Fuel Award, but whether that was FUELS or FOOL is another question to be answered. The thorniest issues were bundled into a multi-Rio pact, the summit's slogan. That's MUTIRIO, drawn from the Tupi Guarani word for collective effort. Okay. The agreement included an initiative for countries to collaborate on a voluntary basis to reduce their carbon emissions and strive to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees C relative to pre-industrial levels. It also noted that a commitment made by all nations at COP28 in Dubai to, inverted commas, transition away from fossil fuels, close. But this exact phrase, which has become politically sensitive, was not included this time round. So despite pressure from more than 80 nations out of the 200, from Europe to Latin America to the Pacific, a broad cross-section, the conference did not adopt a roadmap to phase out fossil fuels. Instead, COP30 President André Arana Correia de Lago offered to create a one for countries willing to join on a voluntary basis and another plan to halt deforestation. So I see a picture here of former Indian Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern arrives at COP30 to lend her weight. She is drinking from a aluminium can. At least it wasn't a bottle of water. Anyway, moving right along. Finance. The world's poorest nations have long complained they lack the finance for adaptation, measures to protect their economies from rising seas, such as building seawalls and other impacts of climate change. So, in a win for developing countries at COP30, the final agreement calls for efforts to at least triple adaptation finance by 2035. Back in 2024, rich countries agreed to provide US $300 billion, that is New Zealand, $534.6 billion NZ dollars by the year 2035 in climate finance to developing nations, with no specific amount earmarked for adaptation. Moving the end game by the look of it. Most of that goes into projects that reduce greenhouse gas emissions, such as renewable energy, and not to adaptation, something developing nations have long complained puts them at a disadvantage. So it's a matter of kicking the can down the road, but at least it's a step in the right direction. The tripling goal agreed in Belém could mean US$120 billion or 213 New Zealand billion from that 300 billion, well, is earmarked for adaptation. But close observers say clarity was still needed around that target. It's a bit like the fog around the discussion table. under the banner of trade. For the first time, trade has been included as a pillar of the final text, the three-year dialogue to take place under the climate framework. At least it's been captured for discussion, and let's see how it progresses over the next 3 years. This reflected concerns from countries, including China, that trade measures like taxes on carbon-intensive goods could erode export revenues or throw up barriers to green technology sales. We're all linked on this Titanic somehow. It shows a picture here on the news website about protests, street marches, and even fire caused unexpected moments of drama at the climate change conference. So, under forests, the discussion goes, at COP30, Brazil launched a new global investment vehicle that proposes paying out a share of profits to forest-rich countries for every hectare of trees they leave standing. And this is like the last man standing, but if it's got to this level, we have to take it on the chin. The Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva announced during the Leaders' Summit in Belém last week, even before COP30 officially started, the launch of the Tropical Forests Forever Facility. That's the TFFF. The TFFF attracted US$5.5 billion, or just under 10 billion in New Zealand, in pledges from Norway, Germany, Indonesia, France, and Brazil, the biggest contributors. Of course, pledges are but arrows on the dartboard. Whether they're going to hit their mark or not is another question. Ultimately, Brazil is seeking to raise $222 billion in public and private investment, but said that the fund could start working even without the full US$25 billion or NZ$44 billion in startup capital from the governments. Let's look under methane pledges. Slashing methane emissions, the second largest contributor to climate change after carbon dioxide, is considered one of the fastest ways to curb global warming. Although it remains in the atmosphere for 12 years, the super pollutant is roughly 80 times more potent than CO2 over the 20-year period. At COP30, seven countries, that's Brazil, France, Canada, Germany, Norway, Japan, and Kazakhstan, signed a statement vowing to achieve net zero methane emissions in the fossil fuel sector. So that becomes a table crack and a drum roll for the likes of those countries. So let's see what else is on the gas pipeline, if there's any gas left in the tank. Now I'm going to give an excerpt from the Newsroom articles, which is newsroom.co.nz, and it has some very interesting information about the gas report. So whether there's gas in the tank is another question, and you'll see what happens. Imagine you're reporting the future of energy system in NZ says New Zealand must learn to do more with less gas. Energy to Grow from the three big consultancy group, Boston Consulting, BCG, and commissioned by the four Gentilers, no less, is a successor to the 2022 Future is Electric report by the same firm, that's Boston Consulting. The early report proved it to be massively influential for the power market, laying out scenarios about build-out of renewables, the transition away from fossil fuels, and increased demand from the electrification of transport and industry. Russell Hobbs, a partner at BCG and the author of both reports, told Newsroom that NZ had largely proceeded along the pathway recommended by the 2022 document. The two big focuses of that report were the importance of building more renewables and moving to a smarter system with more demand response and distributed generation like rooftop solar. And I might just throw in here, and I can't find it on the newsrooms there, but Chatham Islands is now and very soon to be totally able to be dependent on wind energy renewables. So as this focus in this report will show, as we escalate up the renewable ladder to the top view of the world, the amount of dependency on the likes of gas becomes less and less. And a shout out to the national government. They have fast-tracked rooftop generation solar. And the rooftop I'm talking about is also ground-mounted systems and the likes of Gentailers that are putting it together. In the recent week, another Gentailer has added a development to the pipeline. So this pipeline is growing, and it's a two-edged sword. The more we do, the more we use it, the better it's going to become. And we'll see how that goes. So they say, since the report has been published 3 years ago, we've had an equivalent of 7% of our existing gas supply has come online in terms of renewable generation overtake. That means that the renewable has overtaken it by 7%. There's another 10% already in construction that will come online in 2027. That will increase New Zealand's renewable electricity percentage to about 95% at that time, which will be right up there with the highest in the world. At the same time, a lot of the smart system measures have been implemented. As an evidence of the latter, Hobbs has pointed to the steep decline in how often Transpower issues notices about insufficient generation. So this is a benchmark, a litmus test. In 2021, 11 notices were issued. Last year, in 2024-25, last year only one was. So, question. So New Zealand is doing well? Why the need for another report? Really, the main story of that, of what's happened in the last 3 years, is just about the bottom has fallen out of the gas market. We've seen gas supply decline over 45% of the last 6 years, dramatically below anyone's future forecasts. That context, overlaid with a dry year in 2024, really explodes quite a few fragilities in our energy system. If you look through that report, it shows just where the gas supply situation revolves around renewables. And it says you also things like gas isn't coming back. While the report spends a considerable amount of time examining how to develop more gas, the commentator Hobbs is clear that it isn't about to return to the heyday of fossil fuels in the 2000s and the like. I'm going to flick right down the screen now and talk about where renewables sit in this year. Oh, by the way, if LNG is introduced, it has to be a last resort because it's going to be costly to set up the whole distribution program just like it did in Australia. The cost of a facility, for instance, which could approach $1 billion, should be levied across the entire gas and power sector to socialize the cost. If we look at where renewables go, it says the renewable revolution, it's a RR, the Rolls-Royce of the renewable revolution, shoring up supply of gas and reducing demand in industrials, would put downward pressure on gas prices, which in turn will flow onto electricity prices. So it's a cascading effect. But the single greatest lever for reducing the wholesale price of power is burning less gas for power. Renewables add into the system fossil fuels, take out of the earth and pollute. So building new renewables to displace gas generation could have a disproportionate impact on power prices. Electricity prices have remained flat in real terms for residential and commercial users, and wholesale prices are expected to decline in the coming years, BCG found. That may not flow through to a lower power bill for households, however. The cost of line upgrades will spike over the coming years, even to bills, if the power generation itself gets cheaper. So that's where we're going to focus things in future lines, how to stop the consumption of your power when the lines are at time of use high peaks. Line charges really make up to 35-45% of residential bills, and that'll increase by another quarter to 35% by 2030. So watch this space. Nonetheless, the impact of batteries will be on this, because by having batteries on a battery energy storage system, you can take out of the earth, out of the sky what is available to be stored in your battery, and then use that in the time of use peaks. So that's another subject for another day. What we're looking at is as renewable penetration rises above 90%, the frequency of which expensive gas sets, the price of power diminishes. In fact, by 2030, the rate of renewable build-out increases. New Zealand could achieve a 98% renewable power system in normal hydrological years, dropping to 92% in dry years. So in normal years, gas could set the wholesale price just above 25-35% of the time. It's all happening out there. Climate action now. Let's listen to the final go out. Let's go into 2026 with the greatest optimism, Have a great day, Ata Maria, Planet People.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.